Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Bob, I love that shirt.
Hey, Doug, thank you.
Do something good with your vote.
Do something good with your vote. You know how we're all told, vote for the lesser of two evils?
I remember that.
Vote for evil?
Yes.
Well, American Right to Life says, do something good with your vote.
Vote for personhood.
Vote for something good. Vote for something right.
Like what?
Like personhood.
But okay, like who then?
Any politician who opposes the killing of even a single innocent child.
Okay, I'm going to look forward to doing just that
in
November.
All right, cool.
Very cool. Is that shirt available, or is that just for the insiders of the insight?
Insiders.
The inside circle.
American Right to Life.
Okay. Yeah. It's only for the inner circle members.
You can't get this on the Factor.
You can't.
You cannot.
All right. Now, Bob, I know that we are going to discuss Libya.
Yeah. Doug, you're a former Marine.
Former Marine. Yes, sir.
And it's
As a matter of fact, in April of 1986, Muammar Gaddafi bombed a discotheque in Berlin. And I remember I was going into boot camp and my mom calling me saying, are you sure you want to do this?
Wow.
And
it was 86. You were going into boot camp.
I was going into boot camp. Went in that summer, yeah, as a matter of fact.
Well, thank you for your service.
Well, hey.
And I remember then, I was a little bit older. I'm a bit older than you. And I remember that Ronald Reagan bombed the tar out of Gaddafi's complex there.
His tent compound.
And I think he killed one of his sons.
Yes, and he missed Muammar.
Yeah,
but I think he was trying to get Muammar.
Well,
I really do.
Very possibly. Yeah. Oliver North says no, that's against the law.
Of course.
But they said it was his command and control center. That's why they bombed
it.
But he really did become sheepish and quiet for a long time.
Yeah, it seems like it cowed him there for quite a while.
Yeah, and then we hung Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, guys, you know those nuclear weapons you're worried about? I have I'm trying to make some of them myself, and you could have it all.
Please, let me show you them.
Yeah. So anyway.
But before we get to foreign policy,
yeah, okay.
Let's start here in America quickly, because I haven't had an opportunity to even tell you about this. I apologize to you for blindsiding you with this story, but I want your opinion.
Yeah.
This is out of Sullivan County, New York, from NBC.
All right.
A 49-year-old man from Sullivan County, New York, showed up for a court hearing on a felony DWI charge, drunk driving charge, carrying an open can of beer and four more in a bag.
Oh, no. Come on.
He did.
That is too much.
That was yesterday in Sullivan County Criminal Court. Mm. Now, this gentleman, Keith Gruber, he has prior DWI convictions, and the judge sent him to jail with no bail.
I'd flog him. He should be flogged.
Flogged.
And if he injured anyone in all this drunk driving history, the punishment should have been severe to the point of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And as the Bible says, he would be responsible for paying all lost wages and medical costs.
And I would think that a 49-year-old man heading into court knowing that those could be the consequences, chances are he would leave the beer at home.
He would.
But he has no fear of justice.
No,
he has no fear.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, the reason I bring this story up is because so many in my circle of friends have commented about this recent adventure into Libya.
Mm-hmm.
Doug, are we the policemen of the world? Mm. Is that who we are?
Right,
the policemen of the world?
Right. And so, Doug, I'd like to talk through this, and we called and asked if you would participate in this discussion to try to figure out how do we determine when there are wars, whether they are just or not. Because if it's an unjust war, you should refuse to participate.
And you certainly shouldn't support it.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't support it. And if you're in the military, like, for example, if someone who knew right from wrong was a German and they were told that, you know, we're taking over the world.
Yeah,
They should have refused, and probably they would have been killed.
Yes. Well, often doing the right thing is not the easiest way to go.
No.
Quite often.
You do right and risk the consequences.
Amen.
But they very well may have been killed, but if you're told to unjustly kill that person over there or kill that family or we're going to take their land, you say, no, I'm not going to do it. And they said, kill that family or we're going to kill you. And you say, I'm not going to kill that family.
Amen. Now, you bring up the family. One of the things that that you taught me quite some time ago is that when you're struggling with issues of international policy, foreign policy, there's a handy tool that you can use to analyze situations between nations.
Yeah, that's right. And quite often, foreign policy gets complicated, and people get lost in their values and their beliefs and the cliches that they've adopted. And so it helps to try to simplify and think of families living in homes on an island. Let's say it was a shipwreck.
Okay.
5 years ago. And you've got all these families that have survived and they're living in huts or homes or tree houses.
Yeah.
And there's no government yet. There's no government, but there's 20 families on a small island.
Right.
And then if you think through, when would it be just for our family to intervene in that family's affairs? And when would it be unjust? Mm. When would it be just for two or three or five of the families to go in by force and stop that family from doing whatever they might be doing?
Right.
If you could think through that, then you'll get good insights. If you think through it clearly and properly, you'll get good insights in what is just regarding foreign policy.
Right.
So when would it be okay to go into your neighbor's house? When?
Well, if there was an immediate threat of violence, death against other members in that family, if there was a threat to the people in that house, the innocent people.
Yeah, let's say the father was an alcoholic.
Yeah,
and you find out he's beating his wife and beating his children. That's grounds to go in and stop him, and even in that situation, you have to punish him.
Right.
The government should punish him. But say there's no government. Say you've got a father in a house who's about to kill his children. Then would you be justified in breaking and entering, trespassing, breaking and entering, and then stopping him? Well, yes, you would.
Yes, yeah. And that's not such a far-fetched situation in America today. It happens almost every day that there's a father threatening to kill his children.
Yeah, tragically. And children killing their parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
kids killing teachers.
Yeah.
And Peter Boyle's laughing about a kid who says, all teachers must die. And he draws the picture of himself killing the teachers and the students. I don't know if you saw that. The kid was here in Arvada.
No.
And he was arrested.
Wow.
He was arrested. He was an 11-year-old kid.
Well, it seems to me that when there is a credible threat of criminality, physical violence, death, that not only do you have the right to go in, I think perhaps you have the obligation.
Well, yeah, and by the way, with that kid here in Arvada, they were saying, how ridiculous, he's an 11-year-old kid. They were making excuses and laughing about it. And I don't remember exactly, 2-3 days later, a week later, there's a 10-year-old in Colorado who takes a gun and kills his mother, father, and stabs his two siblings.
Just unbelievable.
Puts him in the ICU. And so, 10-year-old, 11, 12, 13. I've been on the air for 20 years, Doug. There are so many stories of kids murdering people, sometimes for fun, to see what would happen when you shoot somebody. And kids raping other kids and kicking kids to death.
Yeah.
I mean, the stories, they go on and on and on. You can't keep track of them. It's too difficult emotionally.
No, you could do a 3-hour show every day just on the state of domestic tranquility here
so,
in America.
So that there's a principle of self-defense, which also includes defending your family members, your friends, and your neighbors. You can do that as part of self-defense.
Okay.
And you could use up to lethal force in self-defense when the harm is serious enough.
Imminent, yeah. So if we think of America is a household, England is a household, France is a household, and Libya is our neighbor.
Yeah, and Germany is a household. And so the Germans who are starting to kill the Jews, round them up and kill them, and the Jews are fleeing, and there's nowhere to go because America won't even allow a shipload of Jews to land in New York Harbor. They're not allowed.
Yeah.
The Hudson River, they're turned away. And so what we should realize is that Germany is one of those households that has become systematically murderous, and then they lose the right to feel secure in their borders.
Yeah.
They lose that right.
Yeah.
And so then any neighbor, you said Libya is our neighbor.
It's our neighbor. It's kind of a dis down the block a ways and around the corner, but it's a neighbor.
Jesus said, who is my neighbor? You know, love God and love your neighbor. Who is my neighbor? So if Iraqis are being killed by the tens of thousands by Saddam Hussein, there are people who hate George Bush more than they love the Iraqi people.
Oh, yeah.
So they would say, look, that's their problem. Mm. We don't care if he slaughters, if his kids rape and slaughter. Remember?
Uday and Kusay?
I thought it was Stinky and Fumey. Stinky and Fumey.
Well, they're definitely Stinky and Fumey now.
They are. Yeah. You know, when they were killed, my wife, Cheryl, she wouldn't hurt a fly.
No, she's a kind, tender-hearted woman.
She wanted to celebrate that they were killed, Stinky and Fumey.
Yes.
I mean, the one—
Praise the Lord.
The one son had rape rooms, and they literally used rape as a tool, a terror threat against their political enemies, raping their wives, sisters, and daughters.
Right.
And mass murder by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. And so that gives every other nation in the world justification to go in and stop a murderous regime like that. But there's some people who hated Bush more than they loved the Iraqi people.
Yeah.
And so that's a problem. They need to get psychoanalyzed.
Yeah.
They need to deal with that hatred that obscures their ability to think.
And, you know, one thing we could point out in the case of Muammar Gaddafi is that not only has he harmed his own people, but he has directly been involved in the murders of American civilians, of French, German, and English civilians, going back to 25 years.
To the nightclub bombing.
Yeah, and Lockerbie, 1988.
Bringing down an airplane with, what, over 200 people on board, killing them, and then Gaddafi misleading the Brits, because the Brits are fools, with this scheme that the guy who's in jail, who should have been put to death, he has cancer, he's going to die any day now, be humanitarians, let him home, and he's now in Libya, in Tripoli, living a happy life.
Yeah.
So the Brits were scammed, but they're stupid.
They were willingly scammed.
They should have executed him, and they should have said, you know, you're right, we will ship him back. They should have killed him, shipped him back.
In a box.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been appropriate. That would have been moral and just. So, Doug, can we talk about these three categories? When my friends talk to me about what's going on in Libya or Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever, Vietnam, in history.
Well, we do still have hundreds of thousands of troops in Asia and Europe that have been there for 60-some-odd years.
You were there.
I was.
Where were you?
I'm glad. I was in Japan, in Okinawa, and I met my wife there. So I appreciate the demented foreign policy, if that's what it is. I appreciate at least there were some good side effects. But yeah, I do want to talk about this because I want to know.
There are three camps.
Let me just tell you, my gut says, let's kill Gaddafi. I've been saying that since 1986, so that's my gut. But I don't want to just be have a fleshly reaction that's appropriate.
Right.
I want to know if we're doing the right thing.
Yeah. So the three camps who have knee-jerk reactions against virtually any military action by our country are from the Constitution, cliches, and conservatives. That is when there's a Democrat in the White House. But so Constitution, for starters. They say that, well, the Constitution says that Congress has to declare war, And they don't do that anymore.
Now, that those two statements are true. The Constitution does say that, Congress shall authorize declaration
of
war.
Now, after 9/11, yes. Congress, I recall, Bush asked Congress to support and to fund, and he made funding requests.
I remember.
Well, I don't remember what the vote was in the House of Representatives.
I think Bernie Sanders voted present, and everyone else said, let's go.
Let's go.
Everyone else voted yes in support of Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Congress, by the Constitution, has the obligation to declare war, but Congress is filled with cowards, and they don't want to take the responsibility. So right. Even when they overwhelmingly support a military action or a war, they don't want to vote on it.
Yeah, certainly.
So they allow the executive branch to usurp that authority. Congress could say, look, we're defunding this.
They could.
We're against this.
They could do that today.
This is going to stop. But if they took a vote in Congress right now, probably, I assume, Obama would be supported in bombing Libya.
More than likely.
So,
if you could get him to vote, which is highly unlikely.
So they don't want to. So
they have abrogated that responsibility.
Right. So what do you do when there's a contract, an agreement, and the agreement involves different parties? And in our federal government, you have three branches: executive, legislative, and judiciary. And one branch is yielding back to another branch the authority it has.
Out of cowardice, basically.
Out of cowardice.
Yeah,
what do you do then? Well, if you're in a business and there are three partners, and the one partner gets to, you know, work weekends and get double his hourly rate, and he says, you know what? I don't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the other partner says, well, I'll do it. And he just lets him do it, then the other partner is just taking the authority that's being yielded.
Yeah, there's no violation of the contract.
No, if neither party is attempting to put a stop to it, it's basically an agreement.
So Congress is phoning it in out of cowardice, and so the executive branch for the last 60 years has pretty much had their way.
Since when?
Well, since Korea, 1950. I don't think we've declared a war since World War II. And this was we could have had a good old-fashioned war. We could have declared war. We could have fought against, like, enemy troops with uniforms. We could have been attacking cities and bridges. There would have been fronts. It would have been like the good old days.
I don't know that that's a justification for a war if it's good old-fashioned.
Well, I'm just saying,
style.
The modern asymmetrical warfare and all that we're having to deal with now. Libya.
But Doug, there's another thing about the Constitution that I think all our right wing friends who love the Constitution, they should recognize that the Constitution doesn't determine whether something is right or wrong.
Oh.
They should recognize
it ain't
that.
So.
I mean, God,
are you serious?
If that were true, the Constitution would be the ultimate authority. Even the Constitution says that our treaties with other countries trump the authority of the Constitution.
Oh, yeah,
the Constitution says that that it is the supreme law of the land, except for our treaties, which trump the Constitution. And you know what? That's one of the valid points in the Constitution.
Yes, it is.
Because when you have your house rules within your home on an island, you have your house rules. Then when your home makes an agreement with another home, then those rules trump your house rules.
Seems logical.
And it needs to be that way. And in the Bible, God makes it clear that treaties trump your own in-house rules.
Yeah.
You have to obey treaties. Unless they're inherently immoral, you have to obey them. So the Constitution, any constitution, there are hundreds of countries. There are scores of constitutions. You go through history over the centuries, and it doesn't really matter what men decide as to whether or not a war is just or not. What matters is the eternal principles of justice that flow from God. That is what determines whether a war is just or unjust.
Mm.
And I don't know why my constitutional friends want to short-circuit that. They don't realize they're undermining the relevance of God in our society by saying it's an unjust war because the Constitution says it's unjust, mm-hmm. which is not even true.
No, the Constitution doesn't really outright say that.
It's as bad as when you've got somebody in Britain saying that, well, we know this is legal because the UN sanctioned it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the UN doesn't get to decide what is morally legitimate. That is God's decision, and we should all care what does God say about these serious situations we're in.
Certainly more so than the UN, and even more so than the Constitution. So let's I think we could agree with our constitutionalist friends that the UN is not the arbiter of right and wrong. So let's leave that topic.
Unless we've made it a treaty that says it is. And if we've made a treaty with the nations of the world by accepting the UN Charter, then the UN Charter supersedes the American Constitution according to the Constitution.
Now, have we signed on to the UN Charter?
Last I checked.
Because
I thought we're the number one paying member.
Well, yeah, I know they use a building here. Anyway, I was just Ben Stein wrote an article, and he asked a number of these constitutionalist questions. Ben Stein asks in the American Spectator today online, when did we amend the Constitution to declare that the United Nations had control over our military? Now, he's overstating that a bit.
But there's way more there than he realizes.
Yeah. Ben, have you read the Constitution? Because it says that treaties will supersede
The Constitution.
So there's an answer for Ben.
So that's a mess right there.
Yeah.
That's an absolute mess. So constitutionally, for somebody to say this war is unconstitutional, that's like saying we need our Second Amendment rights. Well, I thought your right to defend yourself comes from God.
Not
from the Constitution.
Not from the Second Amendment.
If you say my First Amendment right to free speech, you are undermining the right to free speech because it existed before the Constitution.
That's right.
So when you give the Constitution supreme status as the source of your rights and the determination of right and wrong, and then you complain that our society is secular, mm-hmm. they don't realize that they have conceded the battleground to the secularist. Mm. They become humanist.
Ouch.
It is humanist to elevate the Constitution to be the supreme law of the land. And Doug, mm-hmm. I'm not saying we're a theocracy. We're not. God isn't living in the White House.
No, he's not.
No. Somebody who thinks he's God is living in the White House, but not God. We're not a theocracy.
No, we're not a theocracy, but God is alive, and he is watching what's happening, and he does have an opinion.
He has an opinion on everything moral.
He does. He does
have
an opinion. So,
Doug, Constitution, cliches, and conservative.
Okay, so from what I can tell so far, the Constitution itself and the state of politics in America, I'm not going to be able to determine the morality of this current conflict strictly based on constitutional interpretation. It simply doesn't help based on what we've learned here today, boys and girls.
Right. It's like if Texas executes someone, you can't find out if it was right or wrong by reading the Constitution. It's not going to tell you.
No.
No, because God says, do not profane me by killing people who should not die and keeping people alive who should not live.
He put that in there about keeping people alive who should not die? That's actually in the Bible?
Yeah.
That's kind of mean.
I read it once on American Right to Life's website.
I wonder.
There's a great article there on the death penalty.
Folks should check it out. I wonder how many people are aware that particular verse
that
is
God
in
said,
the Bible.
Don't keep people alive who should not live.
I think everyone, even nominal Christians and even heathens, understand that if there is a God, he would not want you to kill innocent people.
Right.
But do they realize that he also doesn't want you to allow the guilty, who are guilty of a capital offense, to live?
Right. So, Doug, then there's the three camps, Constitution, cliches, and conservatives. The cliche is we're not the policemen of the world. That's the cliche.
Yes, yes.
Your friend said that to you.
I've heard that.
So so what? So when Germany starts to slaughter the Jews and invade other countries, no other country can get involved because they're not the policemen of the world.
Uh-huh. Well.
That's a populist cliche that people repeat because they haven't thought carefully about the issue.
And this brings me back to the alcoholic in court in New York yesterday morning who brought the
beer.
He has
nothing to fear.
If Muammar Gaddafi and other dictators around the world have, you know, the leaders of the, you've got Muammar Gaddafi. Can you name any other dictators off the top of your head? I'm having a hard time.
Well,
who's the head of SEIU?
Living or dead?
Living. There aren't that
other
many
than now. Barack Obama. How about Castro?
Well, I'm just dictators in general.
Russia. Putin.
Putin. Or is it,
what's his first name? Vatty?
Vladimir Putin.
Vladimir Putin.
Is it Michael Medvedev?
Michael.
No, wait a minute.
That's a talk show host.
Oh, yeah. That's a movie critic.
Michael.
I apologize.
Medvedev. Yeah.
There is a Medvedev. Sergei or something.
But Putin is the dictator.
Putin's the dictator.
And Medvedev is the puppet.
Yes, yes, yes.
How about in China?
China, who or when?
Who is right?
Hu Jaibo. No.
Who?
I'm sorry. It's Wen Jiabo.
Is it?
Wen Jiabo is the premier.
When was who?
who was on third base last week?
So you have the premier and the president.
That's right.
Who's the top dog?
It's Wen.
Wen. Wen is the top dog?
I think.
Not who?
I think Wen. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with Wen.
And then there's North Korea.
Ah, yes, North Korea.
Kim Jong Il.
Kim Dong Il, yes.
That was the South Korean.
Kim Dong Il is. Oh, yes, you're right. I'm sorry. That's the anglicized version. It's Kim Jong Il.
Kim Jong Il.
Yes.
And his son.
That's right. In fact, he's getting his son has been prepared for the premiership.
Kim Jong something.
Kim Jong Un. Yes.
So he's the un number one.
He's the number one. Actually, he's the second born son. But these people need to know that there is a policeman in the world. There is a threat of justice. If they have nothing to fear, if they have no fear of justice,
well,
help me.
They generally don't. Doug, I remember when we went into Iraq and the French were complaining. And according to the New York Times, Saddam Hussein had slaughtered, 100,000 of his own people, something like that?
Yeah.
And I remember people asking me in interviews, well, how about the French? The French are saying we shouldn't do this. And my response was, if the French start killing their own people, then we'll invade Paris. Never mind Baghdad.
Yeah.
We'll invade Paris. Like you're saying, they have to be afraid that there is a policeman out there who's going to bring justice.
Yeah, there has to be some credible threat of imposing justice on the wicked
and
in
then,
the world.
Doug, so Constitution, cliches, and conservatives, there are those who hate Obama the way that the liberals hated Bush.
Oh, yeah.
And they hated Bush more than they loved the Iraqi people, so they didn't care if Saddam Hussein raped and murdered 100,000 Iraqis. They didn't care as long as Bush didn't try to stop him.
They were bound and determined to disagree with Bush.
Right. That is not foreign policy based on love your neighbor.
No.
It's based on hate.
Mm. Yeah.
And so the same thing with Obama. There are people who have a knee-jerk reaction to anything Obama does. And so none of those three camps are persuasive to me on evaluating whether something is right or wrong.
I tend to be in agreement so far as the discussion has gone along.
So then we have to look at the particulars of a war and determine how are they judged based on biblical principles of justice and self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say, Doug, if you had your child was being held in somebody's home and you think that they're going to kill your child, would you say, well, I can't do anything unless I think I'm going to win?
No, I'd be willing to sacrifice my life.
Well, I only have one child in there and they have 20 people who are going to try to kill my child. So it's not worth it to kill 20 to save one. So I can't do anything. Would you say that?
No. I would not say.
See, matters of justice usually don't come down to arithmetic.
Mm.
And that's an obsession with those who want to regulate abortion. It's an obsession with a lot of our theologians. They reduce God to a mathematical equation, and it becomes a form of utilitarianism when they try to change moral questions into mathematical or arithmetic equations.
So for the benefit of the audience, Libya, just war?
We're out of time.
We need to talk this through some more.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
All right. Doug, thank you very much. It's always a joy to have Doug McBurney, frequent co-host of Bob and Your Live, in the studio. And when we bring this up again, you've heard all that, so then you could participate and call in. Our number, 800-8NER, KGov.com.